KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but before Mr. Kelly gets out of here, you always dress so fashionably here on Saturday and everything.
Always.
Else. And I was just curious, since you live in a real rural environment, mm-hmm. do you have bib overalls that you wear?
No.
Oh.
I do have a camo bodysuit, you know, one of those winter heavy duty things. You know, you go out in the cold and.
Right.
Just go out in the cold.
I just thought you looked perfect in bib overalls.
You know, that's a good idea. I'll have to get some.
Right.
Yeah, when I go work on my tractor.
Or pet your horses that you don't have.
Well, and my neighbor's horse. Went by AB the other day for the Christmas stuff, you know, the lights, mm-hmm. and saw the Clydesdales. Oh, my goodness. What beautiful animals they are.
You aren't kidding.
Yeah.
For a while, huge. I mean, a lot of the Snooks had them outside the stores,
mm-hmm.
just a single one, so you could kind of get your picture taken with it and everything else.
So I should have had my bib overalls and get out the pitchfork
Absolutely.
And be pitching the hay. Yeehaw!
I just thought since you were such a cool fashion guy during your work hours that when you're not working, overalls.
Bib overalls.
Right.
And that's it.
With pins stuck in them.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, thanks. Yes, and thanks to you for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. On Saturday mornings, we get together and we have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your backyard, what's going on in the front yard. What's over there? What's on that side yard? How about that specialty garden space that kind of let you down this year? The taste of the tropics, how are your houseplants doing? And what is potting mix? How to improve your soil? Should you be doing pruning and shearing? How to get rid of those bugs and diseases? And using information to make good decisions. My thoughts and orchestrations hopefully will open and solidify your options, with the final judgment obviously going to be on your shoulders. And by the way, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, your car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player is Cole. He's producing today. Normally, Alex is doing the productions, but he and his wife, Emily, are celebrating their 5th anniversary today, so he is off. But Cole will be glad to take your name and where you're calling from, and so give a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994, and I can come to your home and do a landscape consultation, which I call a walk and talk. And you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. I've written 5 gardening books, worked at the Botanical Gardens, taught at the Community College at Merrimack, taught at the Botanical Garden as well. And just totally enjoy the outdoors. Speaking of which, as I look out the windows here at KMOX, we look kind of to the south of us is the Soldiers Memorial. And straight ahead is a park space, which I don't think the park actually has a name. But man, every one of the trees is still full of leaves. Now, they're brown, but it's really kind of been incredible that the amount of leaves on the trees are hanging on to this year is just fantastic. Oh, and by the way, the Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. When I start off, you know, when I leave home, I never really know where I'm going. Sometimes, well, I shouldn't say never, but a lot of times I don't. So I just kind of was driving around thinking, wonder where I should go. And then all of a sudden, I went down Market Street, and where Market Street and 7th and Broadway, that intersection there, whoa, it's the annual Ameren Festival of Lights Winterfest. It's from on Fridays from 4 to 8 and on weekends from 12 to 8, noon to 8 o'clock. And November 23rd, that's the opening. And it's the Gateway Arch Park Foundation. And as you step in, there's an area enclosed by a white fence with garland on it. Looks very nice. Then inside that fence is 5 miniature climatrons where you can rent and then go sit and I'm assuming eat. I don't know if they serve drinks in there or not, but that could be really a cool thing to do if it was snowing or even raining. But you just look around all over the place and the skyline, the arch, the old courthouse, all the office buildings and everything else. It is just a fantastic view. Besides all the plant material, this is where Keener Plaza used to be. So there's hollies and oak leaf hydrangeas and bald cypress are among other things, other plant materials that are in their winter mode. And as I said before, the spectacular skyline is just fantastic. Then I walk down a little bit further and there's a miniature arch. And that's sort of like where a stage is. So I guess they have musical groups or who knows, productions. I don't know what's going to go on the stage. Then just a little bit further down towards the old courthouse is the Salvation Army Tree of Lights. And then the Running Man statue is there, but that's back in the other direction. There's an ice skating rink, a tented restaurant, the winter market. And this is all brought or organized, I guess, by ChristmasInSt.Louis.org. And though it was raining, not real hard, but it was raining hard enough, but it didn't prevent the crows. I don't know where they go every day, but they fly over our neighborhood and they were flying someplace in this direction. They weren't actually, I can never really see. I can see them at home, but I can't see them when I'm downtown. So where are they heading? I don't know. Also, there was a couple male and couple female cardinals that were checking out all the festivities. And wow, what a fun place this could possibly be. So it's where Keener Plaza used to be, and there is so much potential activity there. It is unbelievable. So that's the good gardening stroll for today. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your questions, comments, or concerns.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
If you do have any questions or concerns about your landscape, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. He just needs your name and where you're calling from. And our first caller is going to be Richard. Hi, Richard. How are you? Hello, Richard. Are you there? Oops. I guess not. Oh, well, let's go to Sally, and she lives in Creve Coeur. Hi, Sally.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about deep root feeding of trees, and I have the first question is, what do you feel about it, or how do you feel about it? The second is, when is the best time to do it? And the third is, what are the numbers on the fertilizer that should be used?
Are we? I didn't understand the first part of your question. Fertilizing trees?
Yes, fertilizing trees, deep root feeding.
Deep root feeding is compost. So basically what you're doing is you're getting an electric drill or have somebody with an electric drill, you know, battery powered or, you know, with a cord, and you come out halfway from the trunk to the drip line of the branches, and you do a series of holes going all the way around the tree. And those holes are about 6 inches deep. And they're about 1 to 2 feet apart. And then you go do another series of holes in a circle, another 2 feet out further towards the drip line. Then you go slightly beyond the drip line. And you just backfill those holes with compost, not with fertilizer whatsoever. The compost then feeds your soil. And then what happens is your soil is richer, better, healthier. And then that feeds your trees.
So you don't... All these tree people talk about injecting a liquid fertilizer.
Right. I don't. To me, if you have healthy soil, you don't need to inject anything into your tree from a fertilizer standpoint. That's my perspective. There's lots of different ways to go about doing things, but that whole philosophy started with me when I worked at the botanical garden, and we were deep root feeding the trees in the English woodland garden where I worked. And I just saw, that's not necessarily going to guarantee a tree won't die or a tree's going to always have a huge amount of flowers or whatever it happens to be. But healthy soil is by far much better than, you know, just kind of feeding the tree per se. Because if you can feed the tree, but if the soil is not healthy, it's not going to make a darn bit of difference.
And when is the best time to do that?
Basically, any time during the winter. So anytime when the foliage has already started to turn color. So in other words, from the, let's say, fall color to the brown as it is now, all the way up until the point, really, until the new growth begins in the springtime. And then
I
with
see.
The evergreens, it's when you start to see some of the interior needles starting to turn brown. That means it's headed towards a dormant cycle, and then you're just doing it then. It doesn't really matter all that much. It's just easier to do it in the wintertime because there's less outdoor activities that you need to do for your landscape.
I see. All right, Mike, thanks so much.
Certainly. And now let's go back and let's go back to Richard. He's in Melville. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Very good.
Hey, I have a tree. It's a magnolia tree. I planted it in October. It's a bracken brown. It's about 7 or 8 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
The leaves are starting to turn a little yellow, and I'm wondering if that should be a concern for me. Mr. Internet tells me conflicting information. Might be too much water, might be too little, you know. So what do you think?
I probably think, first of all, hopefully you dug the hole 3 times the diameter of the root ball and only 80% is deep. So that's the crucial thing. That won't make that much difference during the first couple years, but that will enable the root systems to migrate out laterally, and that's where all the feeder roots are. Roots that go deeper, you know, really all they do is keep the tree from falling over. So if, you know, something that's been planted only like in October, so that was last month.
Right.
If it's discoloring, you know, at this point, I would say it's just more or less shock of going in from a nursery circumstance where you bought it to your landscape. And the Bracken's Brown Beauty, I know, is one of the evergreen type magnolias. So there's really not a whole lot you can do. Even if you put, normally with evergreens, you want to put, usually that kind of indicates when the foliage starts turning yellow, that the soil pH is not acidic enough. And that there's probably an iron deficiency. But when a tree has only been in the ground for a month or so, it doesn't even have a root system to uptake any kind of, you know, sulfur. It doesn't have any root system to take up any kind of anything for the most part. It's just really kind of acclimating to its new environment. So I would say just leave it alone for right now. And maybe next spring, you know, at that time, or let's say sometime April, May, you know, take a look at it and see if the discoloration is probably not going to improve, but you might be able to put some nutrients like iron sulfate or something like that and see if that will give it some help.
Okay. Is there some sort of a test kit or something I can do on the soil to determine exactly what I need to put in?
Yeah, there's not a those home test kit things are pretty much useless. So you really need to go and, like, take a soil sample, and you live in Melville, but in Kirkwood, the University of Missouri Extension Service has an office there, and you just drop off the soil sample and then let the professionals do the soil sample rather than you just trying to guess from some kind of graph with a color.
Okay. All right. Sounds good, Mike. I appreciate the help.
Certainly. I'm glad we missed you at the first calling. And now let's go to Swansea, Illinois, and see what's going on with Scott. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on your show.
Sure.
I have a question on mulching of leaves. I've got a silver maple in my backyard that drops the leaves fairly quickly, and then I back them up with my mulching lawnmower, and I put them on my vegetable garden. My neighbor now, he has a oak tree that's dropping its leaves now, and my lawnmower doesn't shred those up as finely. And I was wondering, is one better than the other to put on vegetable garden, or should I not put any of them on until?
I would say you really shouldn't put any of them on the ground unless you're going to work them right into the ground immediately. But just to lay them on top really doesn't do all that much good. There's no real advantage to it. The best thing to do is to get a composting barrel or have a composting pile and put your leaves, his leaves, you know, in the compost pile and then mix some fertilizer, you know, basically in with the leaves so you can start the, you know, the breakdown process. But just to sort of chop them up and throw them on top of something, that can actually cause a little bit of problem. So just you have to understand that may be the case. And it's just a matter of, I mean, there's been studies and tests and everything else that, it's, you know, the leaves just laying on top of the ground can actually cause some, you know, a little bit of problems for, even though you're not growing anything in that garden space right now, it can bind up some nutrients and cause some problems in the future. So just to throw stuff on top of the ground that hasn't been properly composted is not something you really want to do.
Okay. And does the oak leaf have different nutrients than the maple leaf, or once they're, you know, dead, they're about the same nutrient value to the ground?
Yeah, they're probably, I mean, the oak leaf is thicker, it's waxier, it takes a long, you know, longer time to break down, but it's just, you know, they're going to end up being the same thing. So in other words, like St. Louis Composting, they don't sort of separate maple leaves from oak leaves, from sumac leaves, from sycamore leaves, from, you know, any other kind of leaves. It's just all the leaves are worked together. But here's, you know, something about, you know, overall leaf mulch, uncomposted, just mowed, allowed to lay in place, can compete with your lawn. It can compete with the plant materials and even in your garden space. So it's just...
Okay.
You know, it's just not good overall to just lay them on top of the garden ground.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. My pleasure. And if anybody else has any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Thanks, Scott, for having me on your show. And now let's go to Bill, and he's in Centralia. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Mike. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Well, thank you. Same to you.
I'm glad that the guy, man, brought up about the leaves. I have plenty of leaves, but I was wondering if it would benefit my two rows of pines if I put them in there and just let them lay on top of the weeds.
No, you really, again, you're just better off to, you know, to actually compost, to have a, you know, a space just set off where you can have a compost pile or something like that. You might as well, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it totally correctly rather than halfway correctly.
Okay. And then my grapes need to be mulched, right? This is their first year. So.
Oh, definitely their first year. They definitely have to be mulched. But
okay.
Generally, they don't need, once they get much, you know, let's say at the 5-year mark or something, when they have a well-established root system, you probably do not have to mulch them. And I'm just saying that from the standpoint of, you know, if you go to California, obviously, where a lot of the grapes for vineyards and things like that are grown, you don't see, nothing gets mulched there. And even just driving through the areas where wineries are here, I don't see the, you know, the vineyards really having mulch on top or over the root system of the grapes. If they're healthy, I think they should be fine. And if you're a little bit concerned from an aesthetic standpoint, 2 to 3 or 4 inches of mulch won't hurt, but just make sure that it's, you know, composted mulch as opposed to just, let's say, raw mulch from, let's say, leaves or chips from wood or something along that line.
Well, they'll never do like that. My neighbor gave me a Concord grape that was probably 10 or 15 years old, and I had it for 30-some years old, so...
Really?
Yeah, it was an unbelievable plant, but I had to leave it, but it... So I never composted it, I can tell you that, or...
Right. Or you never mulched it?
Or mulched it. Well, I composted, but I never mulched it.
Right.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike, for all your information.
Well, thanks, and thanks for having me on your show. Greatly appreciate it. Now let's head from Centralia over to St. Charles and go into Doug's yard. Hi, Doug.
Yes, several questions. We have a burning bush. Too late in the year to trim that? And we have a Rose of Sharon. Too late in the year to trim those?
Basically not. You can do it. You don't have to do it now. The burning bush is already, you know, they're tough. They're durable. And you're growing them for the fall color. I'm sure probably most of the fall color is finished on it, so you can prune them. Or you can just wait until we come out of wintertime and then prune them in the early, late winter, early spring. And the same with the Rose of Sharon. You know, it's a summer bloomer, so you can prune it anytime from this point forward all the way up until the new growth begins in the spring.
Okay, my other question was, and this is going to sound a little loony, I have a lot of the wild honeysuckle trees growing up along the fence line, and what I'm thinking of doing, rather than cutting the branches back and dabbing each one with Roundup or something like that, I've thought about just going down closer to the base and drilling holes in and just injecting that stuff into the base of the trunk. Do you think that would work?
I'm not really sure. I've never really heard of that philosophy or anything. Usually, the Roundup needs to be, but like many times I recommend people with honeysuckle just cutting the trunk at a 45-degree angle about 2 feet off the ground and just taking the Roundup and painting it directly on to where you've made the cut. In other words, a stump or the trunk that's remaining after you've cut off the top. I would just, the only thing I'd be concerned with, if you're going to drill holes in it and try this, do them at a 45-degree angle so when you, let's say, pour a little Roundup down in the hole, that it actually is just not going to come running back out. If it comes running back out and it's not sort of, absorbed into the vascular system, then that would be kind of a waste of time. And
the true
veins of all plant material, especially woody plant material, they're really just on the very inside of where the bark is. And if you're drilling past where the bark is, you're getting into the heartwood, even on honeysuckle, and that is probably having the Roundup end up down in the heartwood. I don't know if that's going to do any good. The reason why you put Roundup on the foliage or you paint it along, around the perimeter is that's where, on the foliage it gets absorbed into the, let's say the vascular system of the tree or the honeysuckle or whatever it happens to be, and, works from that standpoint. Or if you've cut off the whole trunk and you just paint the, let's say the perimeter, the caliper, or the edge of the plant, then it's much easier to do. So you give it a try and see what you think, and you call me back and let me know.
Part of the problem on this is I have a neighbor who cuts his grass once a month, whether it needs it or not, and these are growing right at the fence line into my yard.
Ooh.
And it doesn't seem to bother him. So that's why I was thinking of doing it the other way.
Well, sure, why not? Give it a try.
Okay, thank you.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with questions, concerns, or comments. And let's see, where do we want to go? How about over to Patrick's house? And he lives in Florissant. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Good morning. Hey, I have been battling and losing for the past 6 or 7 years with wild violets. How the heck do I kill them, thanks?
The best thing you can do is sell your house and go someplace where, no, they're really brutal. I mean, there's no getting around it. I mean, they're probably one of the worst, if not the worst, weed that we have. So it's just, what I've, found to be most effective is spot treatment with Roundup just as soon as I see the foliage. Now, I know that creates, and now Roundup is coming out with kind of a cone at the end of the sprayer, so it only shoots the Roundups directly down to where you want it to go, and it won't drift and cause any damage to anything else around it. But it's going to be a long, very involved process to finally get rid of them.
Man. So just the regular Roundup that you find on the store shelf?
Yeah, the regular one. You don't need the one for woody plant material that kills poison ivy and, honeysuckle and all that other stuff. So, and just make sure that the one you get, I think it's in a 2-gallon sprayer. I'm not exactly sure what size it is, but it has a plastic cone at the end. And so it keeps this Roundup going right down to where you put it. You put the cone and then you shoot the spray, and that's the best way probably to go about doing it.
Well, I think I used Roundup before, and it killed the leaves. But, man, they came back, and I was like, man, I guess I just wasn't persistent enough. You just got to stay on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's systemic, so it should go down through the leaves and down through the root system. But, I mean, it is, like I said, it is probably one of the, if not the worst weed as far as being able to control.
So you didn't give me any good news at all.
Well, or you could, like my wife loves them, so she's,
So is my grandson. He'll pick the pink flowers and give them, the purple flowers,
right,
and give them to my wife. And I'm like, get those things out of here before you start throwing on the carpet.
No, but I mean, it's got sort of a magical system as far as it's perennial, so it can spread by with the root system, but also it has two different ways of producing seed. One is down kind of right at ground level that you don't even see. It kind of looks like a snake's head, only it's only about a half inch high, and then the other one's through the flowers, so it produces seeds two different ways.
Man, and they do grow, too.
Yep.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate the tip. I will see if I can be more persistent come springtime.
Yeah, and just stay on top of it. And it's probably going to be honest with you, an average yard is probably going to take multiple years to finally get them all, get it. And you're never probably going to get it 100% under control. But to get it at least under control enough to where your grandson is not going to be able to find any flowers to pick.
Yeah, I heard it was going to take, it could take up to 2, 3 years, 4 years.
Right.
All right. I appreciate your time, sir. I'll keep listening.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on your show. And anybody else, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to O'Fallon, Illinois and go into Margie's yard. Hi, Margie.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I have two questions. One's about a fig tree, and the other's about peonies. So for my fig tree, it did really well this summer, but I'm wondering, do I need to protect it over the winter?
Now, is this a hardy variety of fig, outside fig?
Yes, it's a Chicago fig, turkey, something like that.
A turkey?
No. Fig.
Basically, yeah. They're pretty tough. Now, I don't know exactly exposure-wise, but there's quite a few figs that in the Hill neighborhood that people are growing in their backyard, and they're getting fig production out of them and everything else. So
yeah.
I don't see them doing anything unusual with them as far as wrapping them or anything. They do like the classic woody plant material. They do put a couple inches of compost and mulch around the base of them, but I don't see anything else beyond that.
Okay, great.
And then the other one was the
peony. I planted it, and it's in a place that's getting too much shade.
Ooh.
And I need to move it. Would it be okay to move it still, or should I wait till spring, or when is a good time to move that?
I would probably wait till spring.
Okay.
And definitely, they want to be in full sun all day long, every day. And even in that situation, you're still going to get fungus problems on the foliage and, some spotting on it. And the best thing to do is once it finishes flowering, which you always know it's, during May or early June, and just let the foliage stay as long as you can handle it. And then once it really starts looking kind of rough, and it's been at least probably all the way up until late August, early September, cut it off and remove the foliage completely. And that will help minimize, it won't eliminate, the fungus problems that get on the foliage and leaves.
Okay, should I move it like before it really starts growing in the spring?
No, I probably wait, because you're not exactly sure where it is, I wouldn't think.
Exactly.
So
I did
wait until
it.
You start to see the hand coming up out of the ground, and then go a couple inches beyond that, dig it up, dig the whole root ball up, and in one, let's say, I don't want to say in one chunk, but just get leave the root ball all connected, set it on top of the ground, and leave it for a day or two. And what doing is when you first dig it up, the root systems of the peonies are very brittle. And if you try to move it and replant it, you may end up breaking a lot of the root system. If you just dig it up and set it someplace and leave it alone for a day or two, then the root system will be much more supple, and then it'll be able to acclimate to the new location much better with minimal damage.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much.
Yep. Yeah, the peonies are great. But boy, I mean, we spend a lot of time and energy on them for, those flowers. They are spectacular, but whew, it's a lot of work. Let's head over to Villa Ridge and see what's going on with Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How you doing today?
Very good.
Good. Hey, couple of things. On the putting Roundup onto, honeysuckle and that, what you said kind of prompted me to wonder, can you, score the bark toward the bottom and get to where the systemic stuff will go down? As opposed to having to cut it off like that guy, he could just cut around that part deep enough and then put it in there and it might retain?
Yeah, I mean, he could try that. It's, you know, it's just a question of the, you know, reason why I always say cut it off is just you get the, you're exposing the veins right there. When you virtually take the bark off anything all the way around, it's, you know, it's mm-hmm. going to kill the above ground growth, but it won't kill the root systems. And so then, you know, right after you do that, then go ahead. You could try it. I mean, it's an experimental thing. It's not something that I've really done myself or heard of being done, but it might work.
Yeah, okay. The other question I had, I have a black oak or a black walnut grove of trees.
Mm-hmm.
And they were planted about 10 to 15 feet apart.
Ooh.
And there's a ton of them. Yeah, I know. And so I have some that are probably 8 to 10-inch diameter, most of them on the perimeter, a few in the middle, and then a bunch of little 3s and 4-inch guys in there, and actually I've started cutting some of them down and using them for fence posts. What I was curious about is what distance should I try to make them apart? And then the other part is what would I do as far as what size should I try to retain? What's the smallest I should try to retain to kind of clean this thing up and make it grow better? Because the other thing that it prompted you earlier, you were talking about doing the drilling, and I'm heading to the garden center to get a drill to put the mulch down once I do all this winter. So
right.
Just kind of curious.
Basically, you know how big walnut trees are when they're mature. I mean, let's say their canopy is huge. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying you have, because you're having more or less an orchard of walnut trees, they don't have to be that far apart. But I would say any of them that are kind of in the interior part that don't look, you know, that are, and you have other ones that are outgrowing them, get rid of all the small ones entirely and just kind of do that first. And then later on, you can start looking up into the trees and see, well, these three trees, the two on the perimeter on the ends, are much bigger, much broader, and they're squeezing the one in the center, then ultimately you might take that one out.
Okay. All right. I'll just start taking out the scrawny ones first and go from there.
Right, because they're never going to do any good. And all they're doing, they're still competing for nutrients and everything else with the larger trees, and you want the larger trees, which are going to be able to produce, you know, some walnuts for you, to have as much of the nutrient value as they possibly can.
Hey, just one other question I just thought about. Should I go ahead and paint some woody Roundup on the stumps after I cut them out to get them, the root system, to die quicker?
The small ones are probably under stress anyway, so you could do that, but it might not be necessary.
Okay, very good.
Because they're competing
with... All right, well, thanks a bunch for your help.
Yeah, because they're competing with the other, you know, more mature trees. The root systems are all intertwined. And so basically I would say you could do it with the Roundup, but it may not be necessary. What you can do is just wait, and if you start to see any kind of sucker growth come off where you've taken some of the trees out, then maybe put some Roundup on the sucker growth.
Okay, that makes sense. Perfect.
All right.
Well, thanks. Have a great Saturday.
You do the very same thing. Mike Miller, KMYX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, let's head to Morrow, Illinois, and go into Terry's yard. Hi, Terry.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, I have two quick questions. First of all, late summer, I noticed that my maple trees had black ink spots on the leaves. Is that something I should be concerned about? And secondly, when should I prune my grapevines?
Grapevines, you can prune them virtually any time now. They finish their growth, so you can prune them going into wintertime, or you can wait until, you know, we have some more of the warmer weather around Valentine's Day and prune them at that time. So either one of those. As far as the spotting on the maple, that could be physical, like a, you know, small hail could cause that bruise. But if it's it doesn't sound like a fungus or anything else like along that line, so I wouldn't be overly concerned with it.
Yeah, they were really dark black and looked like ink blotches, about maybe a penny size. Okay.
I think it's a physical thing versus some kind of disease, because it's not going to necessarily, if you've never seen them before and all of a sudden they just show up this year and there's a substantial amount, it could, generally diseases, bacteria, viruses, funguses, they sort of have a growing process. They don't just come all at once.
I see. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Certainly, my pleasure. And now let's head from Morrow, Illinois, down to Arnold and see what's going on with Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Good. Hey, I got some thoughts on a gentleman with a honeysuckle who's trying to get rid of the stuff on his tree line.
Sure.
I know you're familiar, but there's a process that we use for trees for thinning them out during logging operations called girdling. And that's where, you just basically take a saw or something around the entire circumference near the base, or on a tree you'd go higher. But basically just get through that outer bark and into the cambrium, the vasculature, and you get in there just enough to get cut through that into a little bit of the wood. And that basically cuts off the circulation, and eventually that will cause it to die. So that's one way you can do it. Also, the gentleman with the walnut trees. But if you're trying to get some trees out, the Department of Conservation has a process they call hack and squirt, where you basically take like a small hatchet or a roofing hammer, if you will, and you hack into the bark of the tree, and you open up a pocket. So you hack in about a 45-degree angle or a machete or whatever, and you open up a pocket. And for every 1-inch diameter of that tree or sapling, you put 1 ounce of herbicide in there.
Great.
You create that pocket, and then it holds that herbicide in there. And it's pretty remarkable that within, a year or the next growing season, you can really tell a difference. So if you've got a 4-inch diameter tree, obviously you put 4 hacks in it, open up 4 pockets, 4 ounces of the herbicide, and it holds it in there. And then as it's sucking all the stuff back down in the roots in the fall, the next spring it'll look kind of funky and kind of dormant. Within a year or so, it'll actually die. So that's just a process you can try.
Yeah, that sounds great. And just make sure that you have a systemic type herbicide, because you want to kill the root system too.
Yes, sir. They have a pretty heavy-duty stuff from the Department of Conservation. It's called Arsenal. It's rather expensive, but it definitely does the job. And that's what they do on the public land. So it's I found that to be a good practice.
Great. Well, thanks for the insight. And Alice, Pat, can you do it kind of quickly? Pat from Kirkwood.
Yes, leaving my fall clematis and your Rose of Sharon for seeds for the birds and squirrels to eat through the winter time is a fun thing to do. As cold and dreary days, you sit and watch them eat these things. So they're a good food source, I found.
Great.
It's right. Thank you.
Certainly. Yeah, I mean, the birds having something for them to eat, I mean, whether you could have plant material like, hollies or something along that line, or even, as horrible as this sounds, honeysuckles, they love the honeysuckle berry, or even something like junipers. Junipers with the blue cones, blueberries, they love those as well. So anything around that you can have some kind of fruit for them, and you can invite them into your yard, that's exactly what it's all about. So that's a great, great insight. Now, the clematis, I didn't know that, I've only grown a few varieties of the clematis, and I've not noticed that the birds coming to them as much. And I don't do any kind of pruning at that time when I had them. I didn't do any pruning on the clematis at all. But maybe it's just because I had other things that they enjoyed more so, or whatever it happens to be. So what variety of clematis are you? Do you have one specific?
Fall or winter one. And it's just to where the cardinals especially will sit on top of it and eat those seeds.
All right. So well, that's great.
Really, really a fun thing to do through the winter. And it's just, then trim all those things in March.
Right, exactly.
And you fed the birds and squirrels and things. It's been a fun thing to do.
Right. Well, that sounds perfect.
Pokeberries are another thing, if you can leave those till March. And then the pokeberries especially will come up real easy after you after the winter, then you just go out and pull them up.
Right. And right now we have the 3 sugar maples that are, wrapping around because we're on a corner. And a lot of the birds, like, the sugar maples, they're whirly birds, are really small and they're really dense. And the birds are, constantly flying up there and actually eating those, as well as the squirrels getting up there, too. So there's all kinds of things in nature that you can invite, other parts of nature into your own landscape. So thanks a lot, Pat, for the insight there on that. So. Mike Miller, KM Morris Garden Hotline. We will be back after the news by Brian Kelly.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour, and I'll be giving the Tip of the Trowel shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Questions, ideas, comments, concerns. And Mr. Kelly, we were talking about bib overalls last night.
Yeah, bib overalls.
And I didn't know if you ordered some online.
I was looking. I'm looking. I'm waiting for the big sale. Yeah, they're not on sale yet. I'm sure around Christmas, the bib overalls will be on sale. And Black Friday, yeah, is Cole's suggestion.
True.
Yeah, I'll wait for that and make sure to get some. And I'll get a picture of me in them and send them to you.
Sounds
send the picture
perfect.
To you. Yes.
Great.
So thanks for the idea. That's terrific.
Yes, folks. And thanks to you for having me on your show, where we're here to discuss plant selection, caring for ups and downs and all arounds to your annuals. Annuals, woo-wee. That cold spell we had a couple weeks ago, that kind of did some damage to even the very tough annuals, like the hardy kales and pansies and things like that. I haven't seen too many that are, you know, looking all that well. How about those bulbs? You get your tulips and daffodils and crocus and grape hyacinths and hyacinths planted. Your edibles. The edibles. Stay away from that romaine lettuce, especially if it's from California. Well, you're not going to grow California lettuce here, so you don't have to worry about it. And how about ground covers, houseplants, lawn, perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, and water gardens? I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is certainly not the only garden path to take, but offered to you as just a way to maybe consider. So across the big board right now is Cole. Cole's taking your calls. All he needs is your name and your where you're calling from. That's what he needs. And Alex is usually producing the show, but him and Emily, his wife, are having their fifth anniversary today. So they're partying on, or what? I don't know exactly what they're doing. Anyway, during the week, I spend time doing landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. You can contact me, go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage, that's where my email address and phone number are listed. So you schedule a walk and talk. Also, you can give a walk and talk gift certificate for somebody that, you know, where I would come to their home. They can, actually date, time, and everything else can be determined later on. I just email the actual gift certificate and we go from there. Tip of the Trowel is a special recognition for individual, group, or a situation that's made an impression on me and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. The Tip of the Trowel today goes out to the National Wildlife Federation. The National Wildlife Federation, they sent an email out, and because Thanksgiving, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody, you know, coming up in only a few days, was related to fascinating turkey facts. Turkeys likely wasn't on the menu at the first Thanksgiving. While wild turkeys were plentiful in New England at that time, historical accounts don't mention it specifically as one of the foods served at the very earliest Thanksgiving celebrations. Wild turkeys were first domesticated by Native Americans in Mexico, and the Spanish conquistadors actually took the turkeys, the native wild turkeys, back to Europe. Wild turkey is one of only two American species that's been domesticated. The other is the Muscovy duck. The Muscovy duck, what they are, which there's some Muscovy ducks, which I didn't know what they were, at the St. Louis Zoo. But they, just like the male turkey, the male Muscovy duck has a waddle. And when I read this thing, I thought, waddle, you mean that's how they walk? No, it's W-A-T-T-L-E. That's that thing that hangs out over their nose. So you can totally wild and crazy. And guess what? The wild turkeys can fly up to 55 miles an hour, and they can run at 25 miles an hour. So that's just totally wild and crazy. And the wild turkeys are the second largest wild bird in North America, second only to the trumpeter swans. So, and also you can produce or you can support local wild turkey populations by planting native trees, shrubs, and wildflowers that provide nuts, berries, seeds, and insects for the turkeys to feed upon. So again, this was information emailed to me from the National Wildlife Federation about turkeys. Since Thanksgiving is coming up in a few days, I thought that would certainly work very well. So why don't we take a call or two before we take a break? Let's go to Debbie, and she is in Edwardsville. Hi, Debbie.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, by the way.
The same to you.
Thanks. I just had a comment on the guy that called from Morrow about his maple trees and those black spots there on his leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the same thing, and I think what it is a fungus, and it's called tar spot, and it is just kind of comes late in the summer, early in the fall, and you don't notice it before that, but it's pretty much just aesthetic, and it doesn't do any damage, but it is, it's very black and pretty entire circular. It doesn't, it's not fringed or anything like that. So I think that's what it's called, tar spot.
Well, great. Well, thanks for the insight, because I was thinking it was only something physical, so tar spot.
Yeah, I think it's a fungus, yes.
Well, great. Well, thanks. I greatly appreciate it. That's why, listeners are very, very important. And thanks for having me on your show, Debbie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, let's go to Glenn, and he lives in the city of St. Louis. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Mike. Great show, as always. Would you discuss with your listeners the proper way to apply mulch in maybe the spring and the fall, especially if you have some ground covers or if you have some seeds like Mexican milkweed that are going to be dropping and you hope to have them germinate next spring, the best way and maybe when to apply spring and fall mulch?
Basically, what you want to do is many times if we're having self-seeding, plant material like you're talking about, you're probably better off not to put any mulch down at all. But if you're going to put some mulch down, not more than 1 inch, and it's got to be well composted, because if it's not, it can really interrupt the whole germination process. And what you need to do if you are going to put mulch down over ground covers or whatever it happens to be, you're better off to water the area first, unless there's been some recent rain. Because even well-composted material that you would be putting down can absorb some of the moisture from the surface, and that it's probably not going to cause a problem. But that's just one of the concerns that you need to be thinking about. Herbaceous plant materials like peonies and things along that line, iris, 1 to 2 inches of mulch, is the most that you want around. Whether they're cone flowers or anything else, doesn't matter. 1 to 2 inches the most is 1 to 2 inches deep is the most. And then also around woody plant material, keep the mulch away from the base of the trunk, where the trunk or the stems are going into the ground. And 3 to 4 inches of mulch is the maximum for those situations.
Would you apply it in the spring and fall? Would you recommend that?
Only if it's needed. So in other words, you want 1 to 2 inches on the perennials. And so when fall comes around, you still have an inch there, then don't put any more mulch down. A lot of times people use mulch for an aesthetic standpoint more so than beneficial to the plant material.
Okay. On your hostas, would you cut back all the foliage before applying the mulch or just apply it over?
I've already cut my hosta, and what I, I just put some mulch around them, so I don't really kind of care. Either way you can do it. And when I worked in the woodland garden at the botanical garden, I cut the foliage down on the hostas, and then I spent most of the winter time mulching the entire woodland garden with leaf mold. That's what they used, when I was working there.
Very good. Well, thanks a lot for the advice.
Well, great. Well, thanks for calling. And let's see. Let's take one more call before we take a break. Let's go to Mike in Oakville. Hi, Mike.
Oh,
hi.
Oh, are you still there?
Yes.
Still there? Hey, I'm sorry, Mike. Hey, enjoy your show. Hey, real quick, what's your thoughts on feeding birds through the winter? Any thoughts on that?
I love it. I used to do it a lot. I'd feed thistle seed for the doves and for the finches and things like that. But to be honest with you, I've had to stop feeding the birds because we've got feral cats in the neighborhood. And, of course, where you feed the birds, the cats are going to be drawn to that. And it was driving me nuts. I was having to run outside and chase the cats away way, way too much. So now I just hope that whatever plant material that I have around or that's growing around, the birds, like I said, with the sugar maple, they eating, you know, the maple seeds and things along that line as opposed to me putting out bird seed. When I lived in Soulard, we didn't have a problem with the feral cats at all. And what I did there is I just sprinkled the bird seed on the ground, on the sidewalks and things like that. And the birds, you know, they loved it.
Do you ever use the beef suet for, the beef fat with seed in it?
I've not used it. I've been strictly a seed type person, but that's just my own personal choice.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. As always, enjoy listening to you, buddy.
Well, great. Well, thanks for having me on your show. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages. Yes, folks, if you have questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Have you put your garden hose away yet? Well, maybe if you haven't, go out there and just check your ground to see how dry it is, and you may want to still water some of the plant material because, I don't know, this weather's been so screwy, there is going to be a time when we start having some harsh, cold weather. And then if your soil is dry, what it does is it shrinks as it dries, and then that exposes air pockets around the feeder roots, which are the essential root system or part of the root system for your plant material. And then the cold air sinks down into there and could do some damage to your feeder roots. Another thing to think about, too, we've had a couple or three, four questions related to lawn and leaves. And here's another one. A little comment, research-wise. Leaves on the lawn or any garden space block sunlight. So in other words, if you've got some leaves thicker or deeper than 1 inch over your lawn, even if your lawn is dormant like zoysia, definitely if it's, you know, actively growing like the cool season lawns like the bluegrasses and fescues, it blocks that sunlight. Additionally, it can smother or suffocate by causing problems related to evaporating moisture from the soil up into the air. And this could cause, in other words, it creates, I don't want to say like a plastic bag, but it holds some moisture on the ground, and then that can cause some fungus problems. Now, fungus problems in the wintertime are not deadly, but what they do, they can weaken the plant material. So that's, you know, it can cause some patchy spots and things like that in your lawn. So that's one of the reasons why you want to keep up with, you know, getting rid of the, you know, leaves, whether you mulch them with your mulching mower or anything else. You know, you don't want them to get more than 1 inch deep because it can cause some problems. Let's go now to Millstatt and into Eric's yard. Hi, Eric.
Oh, hi, Mike. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question. I called about 3 or 4 weeks ago because I was considering putting some sod down, and you said, oh, it might be sort of on the edge of when you should be putting this down. Well, anyway, I put it down. And I mixed it up with some dirt and some compost and got the sod down. And the sod still looks nice and green, but it's not really adhering to the soil surface. And I was wondering, do you think it's going to be okay? Or do you think I could do anything to help that out?
There's nothing you can really do, to be honest with you. So, in other words, the roots have not started to penetrate into the ground. And if they don't, and we get some really harsh, cold weather, it could kill the sod. That's why, you know, my recommendation at that time is kind of a roll of the dice. So in other words, just continue to go out, you know, every few days or, you know, once a week or so. Now it's fine. And, you know, just kind of pick up one corner of one piece and see if you're starting to get, you know, the root system to penetrate into the ground. If it doesn't, then it's going to be very, very iffy.
Do you think it's good to put any water extra on it? One person had told me they probably shouldn't put much water on it anymore.
Probably if we have extended periods of dry or drought where, you know, we go a week to 10 days and there hasn't been any rainfall at all, I would water, but I wouldn't just routinely water it because the watering is not necessarily going to help the root systems. So in other words, the roots have to be sort of triggered the growth by the blades, and the blades have to, you know, the sunlight and everything else. So that's what, you know, makes food, and then that shares the food that it's making, you know, with the root system and the other parts of the plant material. But so there's really not too much you can do.
Okay. So just if it stays green, that's kind of a good sign. But
yes,
if it doesn't work, I guess it'll just sort of dry out come March and April.
Yeah, you'll notice that it'll start discoloring and not look good.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Sure. I greatly appreciate you having me on your show. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Barb lives in Fairview Heights. Hi, Barb.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a Christmas cactus that over the last, it's either 4 or 5 years old, I have maybe had, maybe a dozen blooms. It just does not bloom at Christmas time. It doesn't bloom. I purchased it from a fundraiser. They were selling poinsettias, Christmas cactuses, and a friend of mine purchased one of the Christmas cactuses also. Hers is beautiful every year. Mine is not. Is there something I could do to, maybe get the cactus to bloom?
It's going to be a little bit tough, but hopefully you haven't put it into a bigger pot. So in other words, they want to be pot bound. That's the best thing you can do. And then I would probably go to your favorite garden center and get some fertilizer for cactus. And whatever amount it says to water, slash fertilizer with, do about half that label rate. And that's about the only thing you're going to be able to do. And it's just like certain people, I've got brothers and sisters that have different, different this, different that, different height. And so you just happen to get a bad one. And I'm assuming you have it in full sun, right?
I do. Okay. Yes, it gets it's in the afternoon, like noon to late at night when the sun goes down.
Well, that's right now the sun's going down
at
right now the sun's going down about 4:44 or 4:45 or something like that. So consequently, it's only getting 4 hours of sun. So even though it's in the tropics, they grow underneath the shade of other things. When we sort of bring something out of the tropics and try to turn it into a house plant, it needs more sun. So you might consider getting a grow light and putting a grow light over the top of it. How does the foliage look? Does the foliage look okay?
Oh, it is. It's a very attractive plant.
So in other words, then it might just be related to the fertilizing. But I would certainly try to get as much light onto it as you possibly can.
But I did replant it about, I would say, probably 2 years ago because it was getting very, very large. I mean, it's doubled in size,
right.
At least doubled in size from whenever I purchased it. But I should have left it in the same pot.
Yeah, they really want to be pot bound. A lot of times we end up potting stuff up into a bigger pot, and it really is to the disadvantage of the plant.
Okay. All right. I'll try the fertilizer and see if that helps with maybe getting a few blooms.
Right. Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, and a lot of times people say, well, if I leave it in that small pot, it becomes so top-heavy because it's gotten so large. Well, what you can do is just leave it in that pot with that potting mix that it's growing in, but just get a more decorative pot and just set it down into a decorative pot so that you don't have to worry about the thing being top-heavy.
And I've actually done that. I put it into a basket, that I purchased whenever
right.
I was on vacation. It fits very nicely, down into this basket.
Great.
And so that's what I have it in. I did not repot it from there, but it is coming out over the basket now.
Perfect.
So, okay, I'll just leave it where it's at, and I'll try the fertilizer, and, I'll let you know if I get a bloom.
Okay, that sounds great.
Thank you.
Yes, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. This is a time of year where if you live in an area where deer become problematic, here I'm going to give you a list of some of the plants that deer do not necessarily like. Now, if they're desperate, they're probably going to go after, some of these. But from an annual standpoint, the deer don't like anything that has a fuzzy, kind of leaf, annual or perennial. But some of the annuals the deer usually do not graze on are like marigolds, lantana, globe amaranthus, cleome, and snapdragons. Some of the bulbs they don't like are like chorus. They don't like the onions, the alliums, the crocus, snowdrops, cilias, hyacinths, grape hyacinths, and fritillarias, as well as daffodils. So if you have deer problems and you're thinking about trying to grow some things that, you know, again, if they're desperate, they're going to eat anything as much as they possibly can or stay away from it. But if they are desperate, they're going to eat it. But for the most part, those bulbs and those annuals are things that they kind of stay away from. Perennial and ground cover standpoint, they don't like the sedums. They don't like the vinca minor. They don't like the creeping phlox. You know, all those are just a little bit oddball and things like that. Vinca minor, I'm really surprised. It is evergreen, so why they don't like that one, I'm not exactly sure. But if you do have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages. Yes, folks, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We've got some phone lines open, so give us a call. In your own landscape, this is a time when a year when the temperature is not really all that bad, so it's a good time to get out there and get cleaned up as far as beyond just the fallen leaves and things like that. Today after the show, my yard right now is not really too bad, but I like to just kind of keep up with it. Last week I was out raking and bagging. I do actually have a mulching mower, and I run the mulching mower over the leaves, but then they end up in a bag. And then so consequently, I dump the bag from the mower into the plastic bag, and then I carry that bag down to the yard waste dumpster, which is in the alley. But a gentleman was driving by, and he said, "Why are you bothering raking the leaves? Look at those trees. There's still a huge amount of leaves on the trees." But I have to kind of keep up with it because there is so many leaves because we live across the street from Christie Park, and the prevailing winds blow the leaves from the park into our yard. I end up with having to bag a huge amount of leaves. Last Saturday when I was out, I ended up filling 55-gallon, plastic bags with yard waste. And so that was without all the leaves coming in from, across the street from Christie Park. So let's head over to Kathy's yard. Kathy, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Great.
Okay, my question is, I dug up irises this fall and put them in crates, milk crates, so they get a lot of ventilation. And I've left them outside, so it's, we've had freezing weather. Are they toast? Do I need to throw them away, or can I clean them off and put them in a outdoor refrigerator?
So now, is this the tuberous, the classic
yes.
type flag irises?
Correct.
Okay. So what you can do is you can just go out and take a look at them. If you squeeze them and they still feel firm, they should be fine. If they feel mushy or soft, then they probably just give them a toss.
Okay, and then what should I do with them the rest of the winter?
Basically, you can shake all the soil off of them, just put them in a paper bag and bring them inside and put them in your basement.
Perfect. Okay, that's what I'll do then. Thank you so much.
Sure, that's what I'm actually going to be doing with my cannas, elephant ears. I have so many cannas of one particular type, I'm going to probably not do it with all of them. But some of them I have that are kind of the designer type cannas. So I've got those all dug up. They're sitting in the garage right now. I've cleaned them all off as far as the soil and everything, potting mix or whatever, wherever they had me growing. And then I've got them in a cardboard box, and I'm going to bring and just store them into the basement. So there's, and all that. Those are iris are not, tropical like the bulbs I'm talking about. But they're very tough. They're very durable and quite easy to care for. So if you have questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Just realize that irrigation or watering is very important, but overwatering can cause real problems as well. So in other words, that's a drowning factor. So just keep that in mind when you're going to be doing anything in the outdoors. A lot of times we think like it hasn't rained for a little while, or the rain today, earlier this morning, was that enough rain to actually know if it's actually watered your ground enough for the plant material? Just go out and just take a shovel or a spade or a fork or something and just push it into the ground and see how much moisture there actually is there. So let's go to Ken, and Ken is from South St. Louis. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Mike. Love your program, and I'd like to ask you about elephant ear bulbs. I, I was given a bunch of elephant ear bulbs last spring, and I planted them in some huge pots in potting mix.
Right.
And they did great. It had nice big leaves on them and everything. Well, I was digging them out of the pot, trying to take them out of the pots, and when I dug them up, there was no bulbs this fall. There's nothing but the plants and big roots going down into the soil, but no bulbs. Are those still salvageable? Can I grow them next year, or what should I do with them? I was going to put the bulbs in paper bags, but
yeah. They should be fine. Just cut the foliage off of them. So if it doesn't have the classic bulb, you know, let's say when you purchase or buy, it's just the growth process and everything else. They're not from a production nursery. And that's where the ones that you see for sale, you know, that's why they look so big and tuberous. Some of them are like as big as a pineapple. But you should be fine. Just, you know, cut off the top. Don't leave maybe 1 or 2 inches at the most, probably an inch of the stems where the foliage was, and just put them in paper bags, and you'll be great. They'll work out fine for you.
Okay, real good. Thank you.
Certainly.
So they are salvageable.
Yes. As long as they grew all summer long, they're okay.
Okay, real good. Thank you.
Certainly. And now let's go to Kathy, and Kathy lives in Baldwin. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Mike. I have two questions. I have a Chinese dogwood, and it's living. It's about 7 feet, but the whole trunk has completely shredded like a sycamore tree. Is that typical?
You mean it's got texture, or the bark has actually fallen off?
The bark has come off of the Chinese dogwood.
Whoa.
And it's kind of peeled off in spots.
If it's just, you know, it could be when a tree, actually the diameter of the tree increases, it sloughs off the old bark, and the new bark actually pushes out from behind. But if it's fallen off all the way around, that's not a good sign.
Oh, okay. It's not dead, but I just thought, is that typical for the Chinese dogwood?
Well, okay, every tree that grows, that's how it actually grows. In other words, increases the caliper.
Okay, maybe that's the problem. Uh-huh. Or that's the good thing, right. And then how short should I leave my grass for the winter when I collect the leaves, you know, and mulch them? I'm cutting the grass essentially too. So, how short should the grass be? Should it be left longer?
No, not too long. But so, do you have like a cool season lawn, a fescue, or a bluegrass?
It's a bluegrass. Yeah.
Yeah. So probably like 3 to 3.5 inches should be adequate.
Okay, 3 to 3.5 inches.
Right.
Okay, great. Very good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, if you let it go too long, what it does is when we have rain and moisture or whatever it happens to be from sleet or snow or anything else, what it does is mat down, and that creates the fungus problems. And again, winter funguses do not kill, but they do weaken the plant material. So that's then, you know, weaken the plant material, meaning your lawn. So then when spring comes around, and the dangerous fungus and problems and things along that line start erupting, it's already weakened, and then it's a disaster.
Mm-hmm. So set the mower wheels like midway, just in the middle.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Very good. Will do. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. And anybody else, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's go over to Connie's yard. Connie is from Fairview Heights. Hi, Connie.
Hi, Mike. I've got some additional information for a couple of the calls you've gotten today.
Okay.
The first one is the lady that had the problem with the Christmas cactus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've found that they really need to be almost like a poinsettia is growing. They really need that 12 hours of darkness. What I do with mine is it stays outside all summer.
Right.
And when the weather starts getting cool in the fall, about the time to bring it in, I've found that it's already set buds. So I just bring it into my house in a cool spot, bright window, cool spot, until those buds develop and start opening. And it works beautifully.
Great.
And another thing, you were just talking about the Coosa dogwood.
Mm-hmm.
I have several of them, and that's part of their growth pattern. They get, the bark just kind of peels in spots, so it's kind of almost like a leopardy print on the bark. It's real shallow. It's not deep things, but that's part of their ornamental value, is to have that kind of leopardy mottled appearance to their trunks as they mature.
Well, great. Yeah, that's why I figured the way she was describing it just sounded like the sort of the increase in the diameter of the actual trunk. The trunk caliper.
Yeah, they kind of, they almost peel a little bit, almost like a river birch.
Right.
You know how the river birch will peel? It's kind of almost the same thing, but it's more of a mottled leopard print looking pattern going on.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks for the insight.
You're welcome. I enjoy your show. Thank you.
Well, great. Well, thanks for having me on your show. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, you know the Botanical Garden has all kinds of different events going on for this time of year, but on December 22nd, they have the Hanukkah Festival of Lights. That's from 12 to noon to 4 o'clock, and a traditional holiday separation. And then also on December 30th, they have the Kwanzaa Festival of First Fruits. So that's from 12 to 4 as well. So there's, besides a garden hotline, Gardenland Express, and everything else that goes on, the tours of the, you know, the Victorian House, the Tower Grove House, the Botanical Garden is, and then, of course, the lights at night, where there's over a million lights spread out across the Botanical Garden, is, we are so lucky to have that organization here in our metropolitan area. I go to, whenever Tracy and I travel, we always go to the Botanical Garden, and there's really hardly any places that compare with the one that we have here, so we are extremely lucky. Let's head over to Godfrey, Illinois, and see what's going on with Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hey there, Mike. Thanks for your show. I have a really bad problem with mold, and I just want any advice you can give to get rid of these things.
Basically, you have a nice yard, let's put it that way, or else the moles wouldn't be there. Moles, their main diet is earthworms. So you could either let your yard go to heck, and then the moles will move on to somebody else's yard that has a better yard. Or what you can do is really, I mean, there's lots of different things. I've had people call in and say it's very cruel for me to, you know, to say, but using the traps is the best thing you can possibly do. There's a couple different kinds of traps, and there's one that chokes them, and there's one that just spears them. But several traps along the tunnels that have popped up recently, so in other words, within one day, then set the traps there. If you don't get a mold during that day, then guess what? You're going to have to move them to another, you know, new pop-up area. But that's pretty much the only way.
Yeah, those traps can't just sit there for days and days. If they don't come up after a day, they've moved on.
Right, exactly. They're, you know, they're, so in other words, they've already more or less, from their own, the mole's perspective, eaten all the earthworms that are along that trail.
Okay.
And so then they don't bother going back in that direction again.
Okay, I've been doing that, so I guess I'll just keep after it. They're just, they don't make trails so much as they make a mound, and then
yeah,
I don't know where to put the trap.
Yeah, exactly. So just watch out for the ones that pop up, and then set the traps on the ones that have popped up. And the you know, the worst part of moles are they have two separate tunnels. The one that's a surface tunnel, that's the one that's the more or less a buffet line. Then they have a tunnel that's about a, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 inches or 12 inches deeper than that. That's a tunnel that they use to go back to their den where they sleep. So that's that's the one where you wonder, why are these piles of dirt in my yard? Well, it's because they're pushing it up out of the ground because they can't lift it up like they can on the buffet lines.
Is there a den likely to be like under a tree or something?
Not necessarily. You know, so it's not like ground hornets that are always underneath shrubs or something like that. It's wherever they choose, who knows why they've chosen that particular spot.
And does flooding do anything if I put a hose in their tunnel? Does that discourage them or make them go away?
Well, it's, you know,
soak into the ground.
It, basically, it just goes back down in the ground. Now, there's you know, there's been people through the years that have said, I just sit out in the yard on a lawn chair and watch for the tunnels to pop up, and I have a shovel in my hand, and I just drive it into the ground and pop those moles up out of the ground and then, you know, chop them up. And then if you do start getting a bunch of moles, back in the 1800s, they used to sell fur coats made out of mole fur.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I'll go that far. But thanks very much. I guess I'll just keep being persistent.
Yeah, you can. There's nothing else you can do. Like I said, you have a nice yard, or else they wouldn't be there because they're going after the earthworms. Earthworms only live in nice yards.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for your help.
Yep. And now let's go over to Red Belt, Illinois, from Godfrey, and see what's going on with Charlie. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Quick question for you. I have a cool season grass, mostly bluegrass and fescue. I was wondering if it's too late to put a winterizer on now.
It all depends. You know, you just have to be very careful about putting winterizer. Sometimes if the first number is pretty high, then you could cause some real problems, you know, for your lawn. So it's, you know, with the not knowing what the weather is, normally, you know, it should be okay. But if the first number is above, like, low 20s, I would say don't do it.
Okay. I try to do that anyway, even during the spring. I don't put a high nitrogen on there if I
right.
can help it, but try not to. Okay. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your show.
Well, thank
Enjoy.
You, and thanks for having me on your show. Also, using for fertilizer, all fertilizers are not created equal. So things like triple 10 or triple 12 were formulated for one season's growth, like for corn or agricultural products or things like that. Those are the ones that you do not want to use on your lawn or any kind of perennial plants. From Red Bud, let's go over to St. Charles and see what's going on with Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning, sir. I've got three arborvitae I planted about a year and a half ago. They're doing really well,
mm-hmm.
so I'd like to move them away from the fence and spread them out a bit. Planned on doing it earlier this season, but time got away from me. I may be able to do it tomorrow, but if not, it's going to be about 2 weeks from now before I can do it. And I'm just curious, is that too late to move the bushes, dig them up and move them?
Yeah, you're just taking a really big chance, because even if you're really careful and get a huge root ball and everything else, when you dig up something, you're going to disrupt the let's say, the feeder roots. And then consequently, when you move it to a new location, it doesn't have that feeder roots to uptake moisture. And so then in the wintertime, we have a really bad winter, and it's not getting moisture up through the root system, then you could see some winter damage to it. So that would be the only concern that I might have. If you can, I would probably wait until we come out of the worst part of wintertime, so sometime towards the end of January, early February, and do it at that time. If these were already
okay.
grown, like at a nursery or something, then I would say there's no problem at all, because the root systems are there. They're going to be intact. But when you dig up something, you're tearing up and doing some damage, even regardless of how careful you want to be.
Okay. So I can do it late winter. I don't have to wait till next fall, for example.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. And yeah, and when anybody that's going to transplant anything, just make sure, regardless of the season you're going to do it, regardless of the type of plant material, that you water the plant material first, because that's going to minimize the amount of damage there is going to be to the root system. And there's no way getting around it that, you know, that you're not going to have some kind of damage, regardless of how careful you are. And I know you say, well, if I water the plant material, then that's going to make it really heavy, and it's going to make it really difficult to, you know, to lift up out of the ground to put it in a new location. But what you could do this time of year is just go ahead and get the spot, you know, determine where you want to have the spot and everything else. Get that area, kind of the soil, worked up, so you can, it'll be a little bit easier next, you know, whenever you decide to go ahead and move them. So thanks, Jim, for calling. I greatly appreciate it. And thanks to everybody else for calling. And it's been really kind of a wild and crazy time as far as, you know, this, with the way the weather's been. I mean, it's just been unbelievable to think we were in the low teens, or even like almost down to the single digits for real temperatures only, what, 2 weeks ago. And if you didn't happen to be listening, you know, earlier on, Thanksgiving is coming up, obviously, that everybody realizes it. And this, again, is from the National Wildlife Federation. They sent me an email involved with some of the wild turkey information. So wild turkeys are the second largest bird in North America, second only to the trumpeter geese. Ben Franklin, he preferred to have the wild turkey for our national bird rather than the bald eagle. So Ben Franklin's kind of cool. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. Happy Thanksgiving. See you next week.